5 UTC right after the international.
You're watching Straight Talk Africa. I'm Heidi Adams. Hello there and welcome. Thank you for joining me. Returning Africa's cultural heritage to Africa. This week, we highlight the decades-long debate over the repatriation of stolen African artifacts to their sites of origin. Across Europe and the United States, museums are rethinking what to do with their priceless African art collections as pressure grows for the restitution of Africa's displaced treasures. We'll hear from museum curators in Africa, Europe, and the United States about what is at stake, what needs to change, and where this moment will take us. We've got a great show lined up for you. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Today we're talking about art theft. And I'm not referring to the kind of museum heists we see in movies. I'm talking about the thousands of cultural artifacts looted from African countries during war and colonial rule, and how those treasures ended up in famous museums and private art collections across the Western world. For decades, African nations have been pushing for their cultural riches to be returned. Earlier this year, France repatriated 26 looted artworks that were on display in its renowned Quai Branly Museum to their place of origin, present-day Benin. It was a bittersweet homecoming for the Beninese people and an important inflection point in the debate around what exactly was taken from African countries, the violence that came with it, and how that part of history still haunts the relationship between Africa and Europe today. Royal treasures coming home after more than a century in exile. This is the closest most Beninese had ever come to these priceless symbols of their heritage. The artifacts include a royal throne and statues taken by the French army during a war in Benin. They're among thousands of artworks and treasures looted from the then wealthy African kingdom of Dahomey in the south of present-day Benin. At the presidential palace in the city of Cotonou, a welcoming ceremony, attended by Benin's president, dignitaries, and Beninese royalty. The historic handover was part celebration, part solemn reception. There is a long, complicated history here, a legacy France hopes it can begin to atone for by restoring lost parts of Africa's heritage. At the ceremony, President Patrice Talon articulated the national mood.
I had little confidence that this claim would ever succeed, even less so in my lifetime. The symbolism of the return to Benin of our soul, our identity, to use a word that is easier to admit, to understand, this return is a testimony to what we have been, a testimony that we existed before, a testimony to what we have known.
Talon noted that many other looted artworks remain on display in France. These treasures hold deep cultural significance in West Africa. They're a visual record of the Dahomey Kingdom's history and customs dating back centuries. The repatriation of these 26 treasures came a decade after the Benin Dialogue Group was formed to advocate for the restitution of stolen artifacts. During a visit to Burkina Faso in 2017, French President Emmanuel Macron promised to return African heritage to Africa. In October, Macron hosted the new Africa-France summit, inviting only young people from the continent and France, no African heads of state.
It's definitely the Africa of tomorrow that we are rebuilding. You see, this youth is vibrant. There are ideas that challenge the president of the republic. Usually messages go down from the top to the bottom. Today, we are going from the bottom to the top.
And Macron was challenged from the bottom up during a tense debate as young Africans expressed frustration with France's colonial legacy and approach to the continent.
As long as aid does not help, as long as aid does not lead to the withdrawal of aid, as Thomas Sankara said, we have to get rid of it. Because aid, this type of aid, makes us slaves. Ce type d'aide-là
rend esclave. Panelists accused France of arrogance and paternalism.
Don't ask me to speak the truth, and as soon as I do, say I'm being paternalistic. We'll never get out of this. You tell me the truth from your heart, you take me to the task, you push me around. I have the right to tell you my truth too. It is not paternalism, it is sincerity.
France recently hosted the Africa 2020 season. The 10-month-long project brought together civil society groups, intellectuals and artists to express their views on the state of the world as France tries to reinvent its relationship with the continent through a new generation of Africans. Now, the repatriated artifacts will initially be housed in a museum in the city of Ouidah before being transferred to a new museum being built at the site of the royal palaces of the Dahomey Kingdom. It's estimated about 90% of Africa's material cultural heritage is believed to be outside the continent. That's according to a 2018 report by Senegalese economist Felwine Sarr and French art historian Benedict Savoie. The report commissioned by the French government recommends the full restitution of all objects taken by force or, quote, presumed to be acquired through inequitable conditions. And as restitution claims by African countries gain traction, some French, British, German and American museums have moved to return looted artifacts. But others fear it will open the floodgates for requests for repatriation and restitution from countries in other parts of the world. I invited two art curators, one originally from Africa and one from Europe, to discuss the controversy around Western museums and Africa's stolen art. Gentlemen, a warm welcome to you. Allow me to introduce you to our audience. Ndibuisi Ezeluwumba, also known as Endi, is the François Billion Richardson Curator of African Art at the New Orleans Museum of Art in the U.S. state of Louisiana. He's originally from Benin City, Nigeria. And Professor Dan Hicks is a curator at Oxford University's Pitt Rivers Museum and the author of the book The Brutish Museums. Great to have you both with me. Endi, I'm going to start with you, and on a personal note, how did you feel as someone from Nigeria, from Benin City, when you saw the imagery of France returning those 26 looted artifacts to what is now the country of Benin? And of course, it's a different context, but how did you feel?
I felt some kind of relief because, you know, this is what should have happened way before now. So making that return now is not as if, you know, they have done something terribly exciting or extraordinary. I think bringing it back is like, you know, recompensing for a heinous crime that has happened a long time ago. So yes, that has always been the way I look at these returns. You know, I don't know whether any kind of celebration that goes with such returns even merit it, because, you know, this thing should have been back a long time ago.
And how did you feel as a museum curator? Did it hit you differently as a professional?
You know, it may be that I spoke more from the professional side standpoint, because, you know, we have been in the front lines, you know, making all this, you know, debates, all this conversation, very heated conversations about the need why Africans should get their cultural patrimony back. So maybe I was looking at it from that point of view that, you know, it really didn't faze me because this is what should have been done a long time before now. Then, you know, looking at it from a much more personalistic point of view, I feel that, you know, every time in history, there is bound to be something phenomenal, something, you know, like change as a way of progress. So I feel that because, you know, I'm not hearing return for the first time that you know, French is bringing these things back to you know, the homie of Benin Republic. We have heard these things, you know, around, and, you know, you always see that they you know, come in like, you know, a trickle, like one piece, like two pieces. So, you know, sizable amounts such as this makes sense. You know, it shows that truly we own these things that have been away in you know, in the Western world. And them coming back to like also see the environment from where they left a bit brutally, kind of is a thing of pride. I am very happy that they're coming, and I'm also looking forward that many more should come. That way we can you know, aggregate the volume of our cultural patrimony that, you know, left the continent during you know, in the process of colonialism.
And Dan, you are British. I assume you're not just UK-based, but British-born. You write extensively about this. You have a book out called The Brutish Museums, in which you talk about how museums were used as a sort of weapon of colonialism and how there's this violence attached to some of the art in museums around the world. Tell us more about your position on this as a museum professional, and what has informed your stance on this?
Okay, of course, yes. So, I mean, in the writing of the book, the Brutish Museums, I was really seeking to tell the story that hasn't really been told of the taking of the bronzes in the context of this immense military attack upon what's now Nigeria, right at the end of the 19th century in 1897, that links up with the history of museums, the history of art, right the way up to the moment we're in now, which is a moment of sort of return, but also a moment where we're reckoning with that history in the present. So I think in the past, those of us who work in museums have liked to think that the sheer violence, the sort of massive range of attacks that happened upon sort of kingdoms, chiefs, but also villages, communities, sort of in the 1880s, 1890s, it was at its height, I guess. So after the Berlin Congress of 1884, sort of where the Europeans are seeking to divide up Africa in between themselves, which we often talk about as the scramble for Africa. We've often missed out of that image of the Europeans elbowing each other out of the way for territory. We've missed out of that the sheer violence of how many Africans were killed, the sort of hundreds of thousands and the millions of Africans who lost their lives in that period. But we in museums have liked to think of ourselves as sort of separate from that, even maybe in a positive light, that when, as part of these attacks, there were artistic items or sacred or royal items that found their way to Europe, we cared for them and we preserved them. That was always the narrative. But what we're realizing now is that the taking of loot in this period of time between the 1880s and, let's say, the 1910s, that acts of looting were, if you like, a military tactic. This was about the removal and the claim of sovereignty. It was about an attempt to destroy traditional religion in African communities. Fundamentally, it was about a long-term sort of cultural dispossession. Fundamentally, the museum was put to work to make all of those things last, because museums are about seeking to intervene with time so things are preserved over time. So part of what we're preserving, we have learned in the museum sector, you know, is that violence. The violence has been written into the cases on display, written into items in the storerooms. So what's happening now is a reckoning with that history, but also with the role of museums in the present, where they have items from the Benin attack and from other attacks like it in Africa.
And listening to you both and anyone who has read up about this will see the discussion around restitution and repatriation of Africa's art has been coming on for a long time now. It's definitely not a new issue, of course, to those of you in the art world. But Andy, why is this in the headlines of late? Why now?
I believe that was late 2017 or sometime in 2018 when President Emmanuel Macron, you know, made that declaration at Ouagadougou. What he claimed that, you know, French cultural institutions will you know, return all the cultural material that were taken during that were looted during colonialism. I think it's not that before then conversations about repatriation was not ongoing. It was. But I feel that, you know, the clout of the French president making that declaration actually gave it some kind of, you know, significance. We are actually happy that it's happening in our time, and we have some energy left to, you know, work on this. And then we are really very excited working on it to make sure that at least there should be some reasonable level of you know, resolution to this situation. That is how I see it.
And anyone from an African country will, of course, be familiar with this debate around decolonization and self-decolonization, not just of art or of education or of our thinking, but of African institutions. This is a deep, deep African conversation. But what about Europe itself, Dan? Do institutions on the European continent need to be decolonized as well?
So I think, yeah, I mean, what we're learning in a European context, where, of course, that word, you know, decolonize has a different set of nuances, because in a North American context, we're talking about museums which are on stolen land, as well as having stolen art in them. Here in Europe, we see the decolonial movement, well, what some call the decolonization of museums, what I prefer to see as the unfinished work of anti-racism and anti-colonialism that's in our museums. That's about a reckoning with what work it is that stolen art really actually does. So I think a part of the significance of this moment we find ourselves in now is that the role of displays of violently taken art sort of in our museum represents for so many of our audiences and for so many people that will never even set foot inside these institutions because they understand what they are, represents an enduring anti-Black violence and also represents a display that has a relationship to a late 19th century image of sort of cultural supremacy. So I think that's what we're dealing with. It's and it's one of those things you sort of can't unsee it. Once you see that, right, that actually within weeks of the attack on Benin, as I say in my book, within weeks there were displays in Berlin, in London, in Oxford, and in other locations that showed the spoils of war, but also that told the story of the defeat of the Oba, of the king of Benin, that sought to memorialize that act. And if you go to museums across the United States now, you will see that same story, which is repeated in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. It's repeated in Boston. It's repeated in DC. It's repeated in LA, at a whole host of institutions that are across America. There are the Benin objects. There's a full list of those in the back of my book. So the question is, I think, for audiences, how near are you right this moment from a looted Benin bronze? And you're often nearer than you think. And once you realize how near you are, how near are you then to a memorial to this ultra-violent attack, which is so iconic, it represents so much other violence against those who lived on the continent of Africa, you know, in the 1880s, 1890s.
Indy, should every piece of African art, African artifact that has been found to be looted from an African country be returned to the continent? Is that a tall order? Is that a practical expectation? Does it matter?
maybe I don't want to take the you know, practical route first. I think I am going to first of all declare that every looted object deserves to be returned. Everyone that was looted. That does not mean that there weren't objects that left that were looted. Object probably left before colonialism. That is fact. So, you know, any object that, you know, fall within that bracket of, you know, looted object, first and foremost, before any negotiation, according to what Dan probably declared in his book, needs to be returned. Then when it gets back to where they were originally taken from, we can now go back to the other universal language. You know, artwork was created for humankind's enjoyment. It wasn't created for just specific, small and hidden. If we have to follow due processes, because that is the language that, you know, a lot of Nigerians understand, if we have to follow due process, I think you have to return what you stole first before, you know, I can decide whether, you know, I would consider letting you show it to your audience, or I will tell you, to come and view it in my own collection. If we don't go that route, I think, stopping and saying, okay, the technicalities, there's obviously technicalities bringing these things back, but you know, they bringing back sometimes may not even be a physical bringing back. The acceptance and you know, willingness to you know, do that is a big plus in the right direction. And the current Oba had even declared that his father had told him that, you know, some of those objects should be out there and represent and be like a representative of the kingdom, you know, showcasing what the kingdom could achieved in, you know, in time past. Yeah. So first thing first, return my stuff, and then we can then negotiate.
And I'll have more from my discussion with Dan Hicks and Ndumbuisi Endi Ezelewomba after the break. We'll be back in a moment.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
Here's more now from my discussion with Ndubuisi Ezelewomba from the New Orleans Museum of Art here in the United States and Professor Dan Hicks, curator at Oxford University's Pitt Rivers Museum in the United Kingdom. Andy, you spoke earlier about only accessing museums as an adult. You know, same here. I mean, growing up in South Africa, I didn't have access to them either. The first real museums I entered were in Europe and the United States. And it does take some time getting used to, I mean, to really appreciate something that you were not exposed to very early on in life. And so, as you said, art is supposed to be for the enjoyment of everyone. But Dan, this is also about the business of art. When we talk about loaning pieces, and some of these African artifacts fetch millions of dollars. So this also then speaks to ownership, rightful ownership. How should African art then make their way from the African continent to museums in other parts of the world? How does one do this right from here on forward?
So it's a really important question. So we've never needed something like a World Culture Museum, an anthropology museum, more than we do in the present day. These institutions are spaces where we can experience and we can celebrate art, but also ways of being, ways of thinking, believing, that's outside of the conventional Euro-American centric lens. We can appreciate art from around the world. We can look at human diversity in those ways. But that central mission that we need so much for our multicultural societies is hamstrung and hypocritical for as long as we're holding on to stolen goods. So it's very simple, really. I mean, we need, as we are actually increasingly told here in the UK by our Nigerian visitors, who will say, How come if I want to see African art in this institution that I can only see art that's 150 years old? Where is contemporary African art? Where do I see that? So what the role is, I think, for these really important institutions, so like the Pitt Rivers, where I work here at the University of Oxford, you know, like the British Museum and like the Metropolitan Museum and all these wonderful institutions that we have around the world, what we need to do is, at the same time as we give back when asked what was stolen, we need to start to fill up our displays with art that can remind us that contemporary, some of the most important and exciting contemporary art is from the continent of Africa. You know, that so much art from outside of the conventional, you know, European or American artistic sort of canon actually deserves really sort of, I think, yeah, to be celebrated. So this is not, this work of restitution is not, and I think this is where the intervention I sought to make with the British Museums comes in. This is not about the restitutionists who hate museums and want to shut them down versus those who work in museums, the curators, who want to hold on to everything, retain it, and to keep things the same. So I, as a museum worker, as a museum professional, sort of like so many who work in museums, am part of an evolution of our ethical practice, where we want to imagine a world culture museum where nothing is stolen, where if someone asks for something back that was literally, they were invaded, you know, and the sacred sites were burnt to the ground, and after the desecration, the art was taken and put on display to celebrate that victory, those items have to be given back. So of course, this is about expanding our museums. It's about making our museums fit for our time. So it's so hard for us, I think, to imagine that art and culture is something that can be anything other than positive. That's a part of the challenge here. It's so hard to see art, whether it's in the form, if you like, of a Confederate statue that's across the way from the courthouse and was put there to tell a certain story about supremacy, or whether it's actually a sort of looted item that is put on display inside a museum. What was happening was the use of art and culture for the purposes of seeking to tell a story of cultural supremacy. We have to be ready to take apart that white infrastructure, that infrastructure of one worldview that's had its day, it's from the past, while retaining and evolving our museums as they change so they're fit for our times.
Now, we see that whenever there is a discussion around things like restitution, reparations, righting the wrongs of the past, that makes people uncomfortable and often strikes, you know, fear and concern in people and parts of society that have benefited from the status quo up to now. And as I listen to Dan, I hear he's saying there is also opportunity here, not just for museums to look and feel different, but also to expand and become more inclusive, and that means more room for contemporary art, does it? I mean, Andy, what should the perfect African art collection look like in museums outside of the African continent, as you see it?
Right. Yeah, because when you had asked Dan that question, I was about going to jump in. But yes, Dan has actually stated it very correctly. You know, very early on when I ventured into the, you know, museum establishment, I found myself in the Virginia Museum of Fine Art. And I believe that was the trend in the few other museums that I visited. The African art collection tells one type of story. It tells a type of story that, you know, stopped somewhere. And I remembered, you know, screaming that that is not a true reflection of Africa, that I came out from Africa, which means that Africa is a living continent. So if it's a living continent, it means things are happening. And those objects that we see in museums kind of tell of a past. So you know, how will you tell the story of Africa as being in the past? And whereas people like me, younger and even older than me, are coming out from the continent, and you've seen them, they're creating works. They're creating works, they're actually doing things. So, you know, it dawned on me that, you know, when those objects left, you know, because of the way they left, that brutal way that they left, they were taken out, they were drawn, they were yanked out. Even you can see them in some of the museum displays. Take, for instance, the Kota reliquary bundles. You see all the bundles are yanked out and you see only the guardian figure standing. That is half the story. And then when they construct, when knowledge is being produced using those half and half kind of, you know, material, we don't get a very clearer or a complete or a robust knowledge of that material. So, you know, I started pointing that, you know, if we really are going to be in the business of, you know, displaying this material, and if some of our colleagues in the academy who have been to the continent to do field work, they were able to bring some kind of knowledge back. I think if we are really vested in the business of, you know, righting the wrongs of the past and truly giving a much more nuanced picture and information of the material, then there is need for us to, you know, embark on effective fieldwork. We need to go back there because most of the cultures that we are talking about, they are still living cultures. Forget that with an artificial country has been created around them, but those cultures are there. So we should be bold enough to return back to the culture and try to get a comprehensive information. Because I remember there was one time in the American political debates, I believe that was during the time of John McCain and his running mate Sarah Palin, when she maybe erroneously referred to Africa as a country. Sometimes we have that impression here, but if we have a very robust kind of knowledge production that probably came from the continent and not you creating some kind of knowledge about the continent and its material, that way I think we are doing justice to both the continent and the materials we have. And like Dan had said very vividly, with the current creative activities happening in the continent, we cannot overlook that. It's part of Africa. If you can't find the traditional material or what we call the historic materials, there should be contemporary materials that complement those people. And so if the business of, you know, displaying Africa is to tell the truth or is to create a true picture of the continent, institutions should be, you know, bold enough to collect Africa completely and tell a complete African story.
Dan, tell me, is there a very deep understanding among curators in the rest of the world about the real history and backstory of the art that they exhibit, especially when it comes to African art? Do people want to understand the complete narrative? I guess what I'm trying to find out is, what's the gap between what museums tell visitors, what they tell themselves, and the real, sometimes very disturbing backstory of the art pieces that they exhibit?
Sure, okay, now you're asking. Yeah, that's a really important question. So the first thing to say is that restitution already is a normal part of the professional curatorial practice of our museums. But I'm old enough to remember when those normal circumstances that we do now in terms of the returning of Nazi loot from those from which it was taken or their descendants, or the return of ancestral human remains to Native American communities, to First Nations, to Indigenous communities around the world, those ideas were once controversial. In the 1990s, we heard the same arguments against restitution put then in those contexts that we hear now for African objects of culture. We were told if you return these items, they won't be on display. They might not be looked after properly. They might be sold. All those things might happen. But of course, if you return something that somebody owns, you return it. It's their thing. They can do what they want with it. In terms of the sort of, you know, if we look at the United States, where there is, of course, long-standing legal provision under, you know, what's known as NAGPRA, for the return of Native American ancestral human remains, those items, because they're parts of human beings, their ancestral remains, they are normally destroyed. They are buried, you know, and that process of undoing the work of the museum is understood by the curators who work in museums, as well as by those involved in the receiving of their ancestors. It's understood as a step towards reconciliation, a step towards healing. You know, it isn't enough in itself, but it's a start for recognizing wrongs that were committed in the name of the museum, but also recognizing that as long as you still hold on to those things, you're repeating that same hurt, that same violence. So why is it that in our sector we can have those conversations and make those actions, take those actions in terms of those kinds of restitution, but somehow returns to Africa, demands for Africa are treated differently? This is now in my sector, it's a point at which we cannot hold those contradictions in our mind any longer. It's impossible to treat Africa one way and to treat the rest of the world another. So actually, the reality is what I write in my book and the intervention I make, because I work in a museum and I'm arguing for the case-by-case approach to restitution in terms of African cultural restitution, that is not a minority position, you know, among those who work in museums, but it's hard for those who work in museums to speak out. So I'm incredibly lucky that I'm a university professor here at the University of Oxford. So part of my job is academic freedom. Endy has the same. We are very privileged in that we work in the museum sector, but we can say what everyone else is thinking, and we can help effect that institutional change, which fundamentally what is driving this are demands from African colleagues. This is an African-led movement. The first restitutions of the Benin material were made as early as 1938. This isn't something that someone just thought up overnight. It's a long-standing process. So we have to work with other people. This is no longer me as the curator saying, here's what's going to happen. We have to work in a consensual manner with all involved. And when you have items like the Benin bronzes, which are of such importance for people in Edo State, which are going, when they are returned, to inspire not just the museum goers or to catalyze those who care about traditional religion or sovereignty, but are, because of their artistic form, they will inspire so many in the fashion industry, in art, in tech, in filmmaking, you know, in all of these artistic forms and industrial sort of forms of industry that Nigeria increasingly is so exciting for. So for all those reasons, I think the good news is that in the museum sector, we're ready to see this shift in ethical practice. So that's why we are now seeing returns being made from the United States, from Europe, you know, sort of day by day, more and more are going back to Nigeria and also to other parts of Africa.
Endy, is returning Africa's art enough? Should it be accompanied by reparations? I mean, if you look at the way France has handled this, commissioning the restitution of art report, returning the looted artifacts, all the ceremony around it, and then investing in how and where they will be housed on the continent. Is this a good model to follow? And what now is the onus on African nations in terms of what to do next and how to make all this returned art accessible to everyone on the continent?
What you have described now is, you know, partly what is expected, because, you know, here there are some times that I tend to use the three R's, which is repatriate, reparate, and restitute. Within that, you know, terminology, reparation, there should be a lot more done. You know, France commissioning the Sassavoie report, returning some, and eventually going to return to all these places, and is investing in building the actual physical infrastructure, there is something that potentially could be missing. Why did I say that? In 2006, when I started active field work within Benin, or within Nigeria, basically, I had visited one of the national museums within Benin City to go and see if I can find some archival material about the ancient kingdom. I had been to the museum a number of occasions. I couldn't find what I was looking for. And I got really vexed. I was going to leave the museum and go to the university to see if I can find something. And then on my way out, a janitor followed after me, stopped me halfway and said, are you looking for the, are you interested in having an ancient map of Benin Kingdom? I became excited. I really wanted to see all the lines that the moat, which is like a wall that you know went around the city, looked like from a map. And then I was happy. I said, let's go back so that you can show me where it is that I couldn't find it. And the young guy said, no, it's not in the museum. I have it at home. I can get it for you if you're willing to pay. Because I know that if we want to argue about museums, I have started working on an idea as shrines as mini museums. They are kind of museums in their own. My colleague from Mali had even told us about the open museum where villagers can bring things and just put out there. It's a kind of museum. They have similar type in the grass fields of Cameroon, where the Kom people live. They bring out a mask and finish dancing and return it back to a place that looked like a museum. So there are all these type of things.
I think we should underline what Andy has sort of pointed out there, that the model of what we think a museum is being reimagined on an African model right this moment. So much of the most exciting thinking about museums is from the continent of Africa at this moment, and we're being challenged and we're learning from our African colleagues, from Dakar to Lagos to Kenya to Cairo. You know, we are seeing ideas of the museum not as a kind of prison cell or an end point, the place where objects go to die. We're seeing museums being reimagined as a process, as a space that's about human beings and not about objects, as spaces for creativity. Something that's not an end point, but is the start of sort of cultural activity. So that's what's so exciting here. We are seeing the notion of what a museum is being reinvented.
Ndubuisi Ezeluwumba from New Orleans Museum of Art in Louisiana and Professor Dan Hicks, author of the book, The Brutish Museums. Gentlemen, thank you so much for a fascinating conversation. I appreciate your perspectives and I do appreciate your time.
Okay, super.
Thank you.
Okay, good to see you. All right. So we asked you on social media whether every African artifact found to have been looted should be returned to the continent. And what do you think African countries should do with those artifacts that have been returned? And I'm going to pull up some of your comments here. Chwezi Lugolubi says, it is sad that this is even a matter of discussion. The people who stole these artifacts have no relation to them. They have no significant understanding of what they represent. Those items should be returned to those communities from where they were taken. Use these items as teaching references, display them for revenue, and give back the collections to the communities where they belong. Paul Akugizibwe from Uganda says, let them return what can be returned. A thief who repents may be forgiven. And here's what Lauren Senyonjo from Uganda posted. Such artifacts depict our culture, our heritage. We should preserve them for the generations to come. So they should be returned and restored. Africa will be great again. Ivan Tumusime from South Africa says he knows for a fact that, quote, that ain't gonna happen. Repatriation is a scam, he says. And Semanda Francis thinks they should keep the art pieces so they serve as a reminder of what they stole from Africa. Will they return African gold, copper, cobalt, diamonds, and timber? Can they pay African slaves who worked for free for more than 200 years? I think every nation who participated in the colonization of Africa ought to be ashamed. And Kenneth Biamugisha from Uganda says they should return our art pieces and also compensate us equivalent to the amount they earned from them while in their museums.
Thank you so much for your comments and your input. We really appreciate them. Well, coming up after the break, a one-on-one conversation with cultural historian and curator Oluwatoyin Sogbesan about what the repatriation of African art means for young people, their identity, and their African heritage. Her conversation with our Zoe Liudaki next. You're watching Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Welcome back. As the call for the repatriation of African artifacts taken during war and colonialism intensifies in Europe and the United States, a new narrative is emerging about ownership and cultural identity. Oluwatoyin Sogbesan is a cultural historian and curator, and she welcomes the new reality. She told Zoe Liudaki it gives young people in her country of Nigeria an important opportunity to connect with, as she put it, the kingly objects of their ancestors.
Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, Dr. Sogbesan. I want to start with a definition. What are the Benin bronzes?
Not all of them are bronze objects, but they're easily called bronzes for easy identification. It's a Sepredu technology, the lost wax technology. It's not all of them that are bronzes, they are full bronzes like that. But they are kingly objects, so to speak, that have showed the authority, the pristine nature of royalty within the African people, especially within the Edo people. So they immortalize their kings, they immortalize the great people amongst them using this technique. So the artists have continued to use this technique, and they're still working using that technique in Benin. These are just objects that people are taught at the time were not from Africa. And now it's interesting, everybody knows they're African objects. So the capaciousness, the intelligence, the creativity of Africa has come forth through the works of our forefathers.
We seem to be at a point in time where restitution is becoming a reality. It's no longer an alien concept. Of course, it took over a century for this to happen. Do you see this as a sincere gesture, or is it a kind of a political move from the former colonial powers?
I'll say the time has come. From different perspective, one can see it as a political maneuver, but the mere fact that it's been acknowledged and it's become a buzzword in the sense that it's not just within the institutions anymore. It's not just within the political party anymore. Different artists in art group in different academic circles are now talking about it in a more open conversation. I think the time is now and the time is right. If they're gonna act on it sincerely, that's a question in itself. But that they're acknowledging it, it is good enough for me.
What would you say to museums like the British Museum that offer the option of loaning objects to the countries of origin instead of returning? Actually, the Edo Museum objects that will come, I believe, mainly from the British Museum will be on loan. Loaning is different than returning.
You can only keep what I give you to keep. Say, for instance, my mom's ornamental diamonds, I give them to Zoe. then you have a right to keep that. But after the punitive expedition, as they put it, of 1897, you don't have a right to keep what is being stolen. There's so many questions that are not being answered. I welcome the tour. It's a touring exhibition. Nigeria is one of the stops. Yeah, right. We will go and see it. But we just want to know when the discussion about the restitution, proper restitution of what it means will happen, if it will happen. So you're saying you're giving back. You're giving me back for 6 months, for 2 months, for 3 months. Then that's not giving back. That's a loan. Because the objects can as well go on a tour for such number of months. Also, if you're saying restitution, they've come up with restitution, permanent and temporary. We need to really have a better understanding. Temporary restitution is as good as a loan. There's no need agreeing to that. It's a different case. If we're saying, oh yeah, right, they've been with you for a while, we come to terms, you could keep them, but anytime we need them, we'll come for them. And there's, you know, an open agreement to that. That's a different case. But just say, oh, we're just going to give it on a loan because, in quote, Africa might not be able to keep their stuff themselves. We've been keeping them even before they were looted. So why can't we keep them now?
In a recent interview you gave about the Benin bronzes, you made an interesting statement. You said that observing objects through a glass is a colonial concept. What is the African way?
The Africa has three stages of museums. And what do I mean by that? A museum is a place where you keep your relics, your history, or artifacts that identifies or proves the history or puts that authority upon a story. And it tells a story of a people or of cultures that have gone into extinction. So in the African setting, the first type of museum is the home, within the home. So in the home, you could have a place where you put your mementos, your family relics, your family, maybe if you're traditional worshippers, it might be your deity, and then you decorate such a place. It's a place where when your visitors come in, they know who you are. They know maybe you're from the Ifa family. They know maybe you're from the, you know, they tend to know your identity from there. You move on from that stage then to the shrines. The shrines are places where you keep some of these deities, the Ibeji dolls, for instance, you know, the Obalufo mask, the Oriolokun, the bronzes, you know, it, depending on what they're used for. So then the shrines will be a place where you will see some of these artifacts of value. The third layer will be the palaces. The palaces in Africa are the institutional buildings. And then they are the kings, the chiefs, they are custodians of culture. So that will be the final place where you'll find lots and lots of what makes up that community, of what helps you to identify that community, and of the best of their works and their wares. The ones in the king's palaces won't be kept behind glass, so to speak, but they'll be kept safe in such a way that they're brought out. It's just like when you have a guest, you bring out your best of chinas to serve that guest. They're brought out during either festivals, or they're brought out when there's an important guest, or there's something that the community is celebrating and they need to bring these artifacts out as part of that celebration. The colonial context tend to put it in a box. It does not only become what you would say sacred, so to speak, but then it becomes the untouchable because they're kept in safety. And then the people have to talk about themselves through these objects that are in boxes. In Africa, the objects that are sacred are kept by the priest or priestesses, and they can touch, they can show the children or generations, even yet unborn, and the people are free with these artifacts. But in the colonial kind of setting of museums, they're alienated from the people. There's no connection.
In Benin City in Nigeria, there are plans underway to build the Edo Museum of West African Art. A very well-known architect has been enlisted for that, David Ajaye. Actually, he is the one that here in DC, he built the Museum of African American History and Culture. And the concept is for the museum to to look like the palace from the ancient kingdom of Benin. What are your thoughts on this?
We will tell a lie to say we've not had any influence from the West, and the West hasn't had any influence from Africa. So we're looking at a new Africa. For me, that's not telling of a past. That's a new ideology of museum. And it's very welcomed. It's very welcomed because it shows we're moving on, and it's showing the new thoughts, so to speak, that the new youths of Africa might be looking at. It is still quite inclusive because if you look at the plan of the M1, it's not just a museum. There are different things that will be happening in it. The artists have a space in it. There are spaces in it for different festivals. There are spaces in it for the collections. So it's not just a museum for just collections. Different other activity, communal activities will go on within it. So I think I personally welcome it. My only concern is Nigeria has about 90 museums, and amongst that is 52 public museums already existing. In Benin, there's a central museum that is in the middle of the town, in the roundabout that is very central, and you can see it easily. I would have suggested that pending when M1 is being built and these collections are on loan, in quote, they can be showcased in this museum. It kind of awakens the museum setting, the institution within the community. It allows people to become inclusive part of this loan, in quote, or restitution, a kind of designed restitution, in quote, and then the people feel it's a place where they could go, pending when M1 comes up, if it comes up.
I think what's interesting right now is that whether the restitution is permanent or temporary, it has mobilized the West, and I feel it has empowered African institutions. Is this a historic moment?
Zoe, I am hopeful. I am very, very hopeful for the museum sector in Nigeria, in Africa, so to speak. I am hopeful because the restitution debate, the talks, the narratives has allowed them to wake up. At least they know they have a responsibility. And I am hopeful that in time, even if it's the loan and it doesn't come back fully, the museums are able to sit up, look at what we have, be able to engage our youths. They're able to see the art and critically look at these things and able to see what is the way forward. What are the new things we can make? If our forefathers did create the Benin bronzes, then it's a challenge for me, my children, my grandchildren yet unborn, to make new things. So there must be a Picasso. There must be, we have great artists here, and there must be someone, somewhere amongst the African continent who's willing and ready to produce new objects. So yes, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for the museums. I'm hopeful.
So do you think that restitution will become the new trend, the new reality for the museums of the West?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I know there's been a change. There's been a shift. And the shift is awakening. And I know there will be a result at the end of the day. Yes. Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Zoe. Thank you.
And that is where we will leave it. Thank you to all our guests and my VOA colleagues who contributed to our show this week. And thank you for always watching and always listening. I'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.